produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast episode 415, David Cross interview, crossover album with Peter Banks. Welcome to episode 415 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kay, will be along a little bit later on. Do please get involved with the podcast yourself via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com.
This is Bill Bruford, the ever-enthusiastic young drummer from the group Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
I hope you heard Mark's tribute to Neil Peart, who died very sadly recently. I put the audio of his video introduction into the YMP feed. I'm not qualified to comment on Rush or Neil Peart, so I'm grateful to Mark for letting me use his words, which I'm sure come from us all, after the unexpected and tragic news. You may have been expecting the second part of our Trevor Horn episode this week, but when we had the chance to talk to prog rock violin legend David Cross about his collaboration with Peter Banks, we couldn't miss the opportunity. So we will return to Dollar and Trevor Horn probably next week. Later in this episode, you'll hear that great interview which covers not only the newly released crossover album, but also David's recollections of Peter and of the early London prog rock scene where he played with his own bands and, of course, King Crimson. Before that, here are a few highlights from around the social webs and elsewhere this week. In the YMP Patreon group, we have finally managed to link up Patreon with a website where we can all upload photos of our favourite bits of Yes miscellanea. This has led to some great posts on our current topic, Relayer. On the YMP Facebook page, Daniel Crone is nearing the end of his review series, so go and read his latest rather unusual post, and Preston Frazier chooses his best of 2019, which is always interesting. John Anderson has his own official channel on YouTube now, finally, and Preston was back with his review of Spirit of Survival from Magnification. David Watkinson added a tantalising post hinting at the forthcoming Warriors vinyl record, as well as a display in Accrington, which I think he mentioned when he spoke to us. And in the visitor posts, Mike O'Connor posted Mark's tribute to Neil Peart. Stephen Lamb has been listening to the audiobook version of the Elton John autobiography and points this out. He says, describing his very early days as part of the London music scene circa 1968, he recalls meeting a strange character from Lancashire called Hans Christian Andersen, who went on to be the singer of Yes. It's a bit of a random comment, really. He must have met dozens of people at that time, but he only mentions John. Nice to see our lad getting a name check anyway. Great stuff. Jeffrey Mason's weekly collection included a happy birthday wish to Tony Kaye, Rick Wakeman announcing he's working on a prog rock band record for the first time in years, happy birthday to Trevor Rabin, a joke about a certain North Korean leader, a review of From a Page, The Onion's satirical take on Yes, Rick Wakeman's Gas Tank TV programme, and Adam Wakeman and Damian Wilson playing a Rick Wakeman medley live. That's a bit meta, if you ask me. Do people still say that? Finally, Ken Fuller posted another of his progressive palaver appearances. Presumably he's close to the commemorative T-shirt level now. And Adrian Bell tells us there's plenty of Rush, of course, as well as something from a page on his latest progressive alternative. Over on Twitter, I posted my copy of the Cross and Banks CD, as well as my tickets to Touchstone 2020 with Oliver Wakeman. See you there if you're lucky enough to join me, Dave Watkinson, Simon Barrow, and presumably a few others at that exciting event. Tim Webb also spotted the Onion Yes skit, and there were, of course, many tributes to the late Neil Peart. Clearly, we need to thank Miguel for some items you'll spot, I'm sure, in a moment, and many thanks to everyone who got in touch in any way this week.
Welcome to the Yes Music Podcast with Kevin Mulrine and Mark Anthony Kay.
So So we're absolutely delighted to have David Cross with us here this week on the Yes Music podcast. I'm sure he doesn't need any introduction, but he was a member of King Crimson on the violin during the 1970s, and he has produced this album, which I've actually got in my hands. I managed to get it a day before the release.
One.
Yes, I do,
oh,
David. And so David Cross and Peter Banks, the album is called Crossover. So welcome, David.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be here.
So this is some music that you produced with Peter Banks, and it also features many people that listening to the podcast will know. Pat Mastrolotto from King Crimson, where he actually did a double drum thing with Bill Bruford, I understand. Tony Kaye's on there, Billy Sherwood, Randy Rain Roche, I never know how to pronounce his name. He produced some amazing sounds for The Ladder, the Yes album. Andy Jackson, mm-hmm. Oliver Wakeman, Jay Shellen, Jeremy Stacey, who was involved with Chris Squire's Swiss Choir and The Sin.
And is now with Crimson.
Yeah, and Jeff Downes as well. So this is the sort of last album that we're probably going to have of new material from the late Peter Banks.
I think this is the last of it. And something I'm very, very, very proud to have been involved with, and really delighted with these fantastic contributions from all those guests who, did this as a tribute to Peter and to his spirit. So it's been a great thing to be involved with.
Yeah, indeed. So just before we talk about the music specifically,
yeah.
So with musicians like you, Eddie Jobson and Jean-Luc Ponty, amongst others, why is violin turn up so much in progressive rock?
I don't know. I mean, when progressive rock, as it's called now, basically in the end of the 60s and beginning of the 70s, those were freer times. So there was much more, crossover between, to coin a phrase, different styles, and different types of music, and anything went, any kind of instrument was okay to use. So violin slipped in there, I guess with a number of other acoustic instruments.
So it was really important for me, being a violinist myself, when I heard your contributions to Lark's Tongues in Aspic, a really formative musical experience for me. But having done it an awful lot, how would you describe the violin's role in a rock band? Because you've got the lead guitar. Is it covering some of the same things as that, or is it completely different?
Well, it all depends on the kind of line that the player's taken, really. I mean, my interest kind of from early on was exploring the kinds of effects that a guitarist could use. So it was a bit of an unfortunate line, because what it means is quite often if it's a lead line, you can't tell the difference between the guitar and the violin.
Yeah.
So it was a fairly stupid thing to do, really. But I've regretted it a number of times. But actually, I just find it absolutely fascinating. And I find the range that it's given me absolutely extraordinary. Particularly, as the whole thing's got better. I mean, it was all very crude to start out with, but the instruments have improved, the processes have improved, the recordings improved, hopefully the players have improved a bit as well. So they've got on top of the techniques needed to play, with things like distortion, because, you do have to do the things that guitarists do. You have to stop notes, strings, ringing on, feeding back unnecessarily. So you have to, find extra fingers to stop strings as well as playing the ones that are making the notes.
Mm.
So there's, technically it's a constant constant road forwards. That has been, I think, a problem for me, is the fact that it does, it's a bit, because I'm using guitar sounds that traditionally used on guitar often sounds very similar. So I try to make sure that I slip things in that are kind of violinistic as well. I suppose glissandi and, slides and slurps and bowy things that are unmistakably violin, just to try and give it some personal character. But it's been a superb road for me. I've just enjoyed every moment of it, and I absolutely love it. And, and it's continuing to go forward. So, one of the things I'm working on now much more is kind of taking more of the guitar role, playing more of playing rhythm parts. you know, which I haven't done in the past. And I just find that, you know, as I'm starting to develop now, I want to do more of that because it kind of gives me a different kind of freedom. It loosens me up in a way that I haven't been able to be before. It makes me much more kind of, you know, part of the kind of the rhythm section, you know, and I want to be there. You know, it's important to have everything coming from the rhythm section, and to be part of that as I'm starting to get to be now is fantastic. Really, really looking forward to developing more in that direction.
Going right back to those earliest years in London, we know there was a lot of sort of cross-pollination and rivalry and basically hanging out amongst different members of different bands. So how well did you know the guys in Yes at that stage?
Not at all. I wasn't the great one for hanging out. I mean, it was quite good at falling off a bar stool, you know, and probably might have met quite a few, you know, who might have been down the speakeasy or somewhere. But I generally, if I met anybody famous, I'd run, you know, a million miles in the opposite direction, just maybe too frightened and nervous. You know, I wasn't a great ligger and hanger out. In fact, I didn't meet Pete until 2006. Despite the fact he only lived about a mile up the road from me in North London.
Well, that's right. I mean, there are tales, aren't there, of Robert Fripp sharing digs with Bill Bruford and various things like that. So
yeah, well, sharing a hotel with Bill Bruford and Robert Fripp was quite enough. I think that they had to want to move into a flat with them. It was the best of times. I think they were past that stage by the time I met them.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I mean, from this distance, it does seem very sort of chaotic and frenetic. But what was your experience of it in that whole scene in London at the time?
Well, the early 70s. Well, it was exciting because there were new things going on all the time. And, you know, you never quite knew what you were going to hear when you went to see something. And, violins were, I suppose, as you've said, you know, they were around. But, then, you know, other instruments were much more in trip were being used and much more interesting. I mean, Third Ear Band, I remember, was used to do some amazing stuff with violins. You know, people were just experimenting a lot more. We were working very hard. We actually didn't hang out an awful lot that I remembered. I mean, you know, when we were working, I mean, we were on the road, saw a lot of other bands on the road.
Yeah.
You know, to the point where I don't think I ever wanted to hear another rock band by the time we came out of prison.
Absolutely.
Enough to last me for another 20 years, I think. But I mean, Yes was always kind of, they were the top of the tree for me. You know, when I first came to London, you know, they were headlining at kind of uni gigs, you know, where we would be bossed by, I had a little band, and we would be bottom of the bill, you know, sort of scraping into playing in the bar, you know, and they'd be on the main stage and we'd, you know, go down after, you know, watch them after our set and sort of in wonder.
Yeah.
You know, it was fantastic, absolutely fantastic band.
Yeah.
Always were brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
So, I mean, there was a lot of touring, as you said, or at least going to different parts of the country and so on. Are there any sort of incidents that you can remember which you look back and sort of smile or laugh about?
Yeah, I was with Crimson. We had an amazing drummer, Jamie Muir, who was with us right, you know, for the first tour of the UK, and he was just a constant source of joy and surprises. He was such a lovely performer on stage, fantastic. He used to wear a bear suit, and he had you know, blood capsules, and you know, his idea of a drum solo was just, you know, have foaming blood coming out of his mouth and flying off the back of the stage. You know, that was his thing. I remember him. He was on stage. I can't remember if it was Bill. I think Bill was on stage, and you know, Jamie would jumped off the stage, and then where was that? I can't remember now. Leeds was it? And Sheffield. And he suddenly started, you know, running up, trying to do a sort of duet with the PA speakers, you know, in response to Bill hitting the stuff on the stage and things like that. I mean, wonderful things. You know, he just stand on the stage with your jaw dropped down, just wondering what was going to happen next. Great times, yeah.
Right, well, we'd better get on to talking about this album, which is released today, if you're listening to the episode as soon as it's released. And listening to the sampler, I've actually got my hands, as I say, on a real copy now, so I'm looking forward to listening to that. But the sampler is very enjoyable, and I know Mark's been listening to that as well, haven't you, Mark?
Yeah, I've been listening to the sampler quite a bit, so my questions are basically based around that. So my first question for you, David, is I've listened to the samples of the songs, and I find them really, really enjoyable. And I read that there was a little write-up from the record label that said that you guys did this in one afternoon and it was totally improvised. Now my question to you is, did you and Peter actually speak beforehand about a general direction with these songs, or did you exchange any kind of notes before you started? I mean, it's hard to believe that it started from completely nothing, like a handshake, hi, how you doing, and let's just play.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of work's been done since that initial session.
Yeah,
I mean, Pete. No, we didn't at all. But when I first met Pete in 2006, he was with touring with Harmony and Diversity, and I was touring with my band, and we just did some gigs in the UK. And you know, I remember seeing him on. I remember we played at the Stables in Milton Keynes, and he just said before he went on stage, we don't know what we're going to play. And he just said it with such excitement, you know, with such joy. It was absolutely fantastic. You know, it was this kind of this love of this. It was as if he just discovered improvisation that morning, you know. And that's really my strongest memory of him. He was like that. He was lovely, you know, to these gigs with, and really enjoyed his company then. And then when we got together finally in 2010 for an afternoon, he came round. It was just a continuation of that, really. I mean, we just started playing. I mean, that was it. And kind of the music that came out was that story. You know, it was the story of us playing together for the first time. So he started off with some kind of vaguely bluesy, jazzy things, and I started off with something fairly weird and strange and dark, you know, and then we kind of swapped and kind of come back and meet in the middle, you know. And the whole first improvisation was like that. It was kind of statement of intent and sort of slightly missing each other, you know. And you know, then the second piece we kind of, I don't think we said anything. First piece, I remember we called F-hole because it was something to do with, I think he had F-holes on his guitar.
Yeah.
They're the thing on a violin you have, you know, they're always called F-holes, but the sound holes, the sound comes out and it's kind of ornate F-shape. And I think he did that. He had that on his guitar as well. Yeah. I didn't, because I was using an electric violin, so I don't know why. So it must have been his guitar that caused the title to end up there. But that was the first piece. Second piece was called Piece Two, really imaginative, and that was beautiful. Really, that was, which I think we'd sort of from our kind of collisions in the first one, we decided. I don't think we talked about it, but we tried to do something beautiful in the second one, and in a lot of that gave rise to a number of beautiful passages on the album. Because a lot's been done since then to develop it, but. You know, there are moments that are really wonderfully beautiful there. And I was just listening back to a bit of it earlier today. And all the time with Pete, Peter was trying to kind of push in the boundaries, you know. So where I would be happy, and we finally managed to land in the same key, you know, for a few seconds and you know, making some nice noises, you know, and I thought, oh, this is nice. And then whoops, it got bored with that. And he was on somewhere else. I'd be trying to chase him around. He had this weird kind of confidence in me, you know.
Yeah.
I think he somehow believed I could do anything. I could follow him wherever he went. Just like you know, he just moved, and I'd expected me to be there. And of course, half the time actually I was. It wasn't too bad. You know, because there's only so many mistakes you can make, and actually it was really quite a lovely trying to make something beautiful, have it slightly go wrong, and then, oh, finding your way again, you know. That was the experience. But you only did four pieces on that day. We ended up with about 70 minutes of music.
Oh, wow.
But they were over you know, what that time were four separate pieces. They were kind of two 10-minute pieces. And then we decided to do something in time. So we programmed some drums, and we put in a D minor bass riff, which was just off a, you know, just a sound on the on the computer. And then we just jammed for 40 minutes. And the opening track of Crossover, I think, is derived from that, you know, and a couple of the other ones aren't that. But that was great fun and quite a different thing, you know, quite a different feel altogether. We kind of turned something very strange, very, very, very kind of funky and straightforward to start with, and then kind of got bored with that and went strange in the middle. And, you know, and we kept it going for 40 minutes. It was a long piece. And then the last piece we did was another 10-minute piece that was called Video Piece, because we videoed it. Just had my, but unfortunately the video was lost. So although it's still called Video Piece, it's a kind of un-video piece. Really. But that was, you know, another odd thing. It kind of started off a bit like a jazz ballad, and then we finally ended up really playing a kind of a sort of duo together, very melodic duo together. Which, you know, which was great. We finally kind of really learnt, I think, by the end of the afternoon, then to really play together. So that was the tale of the original recording, really.
Yeah. So whose idea was it to actually record it? Was that was the intention? Was it to actually go in and sort of fossilise this improvisation by recording it?
Yeah. We just decided we ought to jam together. I mean, when we were on the road together, we'd mentioned that and impossible. We just somehow never found a time, and then suddenly, you know, there was a time when it seemed possible. So we came around and we did it. You know, no particular plans, and no particular outcome for it. And I didn't see at the time particularly what we might do with it either. You know, it was it was just itself. It was us getting it together and jamming. You know, and you know the way that time kind of runs away with you. Well, you know, it did with this, and unfortunately, you know, Peter, 2013, I think, wasn't it? Peter died.
Yeah.
And and then actually, I mean, I couldn't for quite a while. I just couldn't listen to it. Every time I put it on, all I could think of was him. You know, his sort of liveness and his joy in being alive and his. Almost this naivety, this kind of real energy and love for music, you know, it's always as if hearing it for the first time. You know, that was wonderful about him and what he put into the world, and that was so good. And this music reminded me of that every time I kind of listened to it, and I really couldn't for a while, so it took quite a time before I could actually go back, listen to it, and you know, and see what was there. And when I did listen, you know, it seemed that there was that it was almost like a sketchbook for an album. You know, the bits weren't quite in the right place; they're often in the wrong place. But I could hear there were things he did that needed to develop. You know, and sometimes without me playing what I had played there, but maybe adding something else, and the things I did that, you know, could be developed separately, and then there were things that we did together that could be developed. And so I started to kind of pick those apart a bit, and that's when I started needed help, really, because I couldn't be very objective about it. So I got hold of Tony Lowe. He was he produced with me an album called Style of Starlight, which was basically duets with Robert Fripp and myself, based on some recordings he'd done. And we'd kind of done a lot of back composition from improvisations, to kind of taking bits and removing them or looping them and then adding other stuff to them.
Yeah.
And that's what we started to do with these improvisations, because a lot of it was with just the two of us, it was fairly wild, and I felt it needed, or it ought to be allowed to grow as it would have done if we carried on working on it, you know, Peter and I. And so that's what we did. We tried to make it grow, the kind of seeds that we allowed to kind of grow into proper tracks. And, you know, that's what you hear now. I mean, they've still got that kind of spread of From the sublime to the ridiculous, I think.
What I'm kind of curious about, though, too, is talking about the feel of these songs. The list of guests on the album are obviously very impressive that we talked about earlier. There's a lot of Yes members and King Crimson members involved in it.
Yeah.
Was that by design to achieve a certain feel for the song?
Well, I always thought it was that the music was somewhere in between. It was a bit, it was this kind of mystery area that's somewhere in between King Crimson and Yes.
Yeah.
on the face of it, there's this sort of the joy of Yes, and the doom of King Crimson. But, and that is there. But there's also, there's more to it as well than that. There are many other flavors that, Yes has and also that Crimson has. And, we were starting to... I was starting to get a feel for that maybe we could try and draw those out. So the idea of getting these, amazing guests to see if they'd be interested in paying tribute to Peter through playing on them. I think most of them played with Peter before at some point, and getting them to come in and add something to this and just to do it freely, in the same spirit that we'd done. Not designing it, for an audience, not designing it for market, but just freely responding, to what was there. And that's what they came and did. And, incredible performers, and they gave their best on this album. I think it's absolutely wonderful and quite humbled, that they gave so much. It's absolutely fantastic, the contributions.
Yeah, for sure. And speaking of King Crimson, a lot of the music reminds me of sort of the solo Robert Fripp stuff that he's done and music that you've recorded with him in the past as well. What I'm curious about is, do you know if Peter was in fact at all influenced by Robert with his guitar playing?
I don't know. I don't think we talked about Robert. I don't know. He was a sponge, really, in a lot of ways. He would soak up everything that was around, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I presumably he would have been aware of Fripp and would have understood what Robert was doing. What I noticed as time went on, as we just in that afternoon, listening back to them, you can hear how. He would respond instinctively to something that was kind of maybe a bit different from what he was doing, and then later, within sort of 10, 20 seconds or something, he'd be coming back with exactly the right chord or the right response to it, and listening back to it, he did have a deep understanding of music. If you had to work out the right chord to put in there, that actually was the right chord, and he went there, whether he went there instinctively or it feels like he just absorbed an awful lot, and it was just able to just allow it to flow from him. So he really was a superb musician, I think.
Yeah. Now, the drumming on the songs is really fantastic. And there are three different drummers with very different styles, yet they fit perfectly with the songs. Did you have certain drummers in mind for certain pieces?
We did actually think about that quite a bit. Yeah. I think we picked the right ones. But of course, as soon as they play, then that was the issue with all our fantastic guests was that, most of this is done by remote control, of course, these days, you send things off and people send them back to you. And then, when you hear it, of course, everything changes again. With Jeremy Stacey, we actually were in the studio with him and so we were able to work with him on that. And that was a brilliant experience. So with Pat, for instance, It was we didn't know what was coming back. And then when it came back, I think he sent a sort of obscure email saying, can I ignore the time signature or something like that? Something fairly radical. I said, sure, whatever you want. And it came back and of course it was dead right. It was fantastic. And Jay's stuff, was also, lifted things in a way that I didn't expect. And then you have to really sort of, you have to listen to it afresh and say, do we have to change this now to fit with what's happened here?
Yeah.
Because, you know, these guys are just full of ideas. That's the trouble, you know. And once those ideas start leaking in, then you've got to kind of accommodate them as well. But, you know, it was a really rich experience doing this.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So my last question actually for you is sort of a, you know, what if question. If Peter were still alive today and you guys were able to tour together, what songs from your King Crimson days would you have liked to have done together on stage?
I think for me, Book of Saturday, I think he would have had sensitivity. You know, he had such control over his instrument, and he kind of ebbed and flowed on it. I think I would love to have done that with him. That would have been a nice sort of duet, I think.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's remarkable, isn't it? You say he's got that sort of sensitivity and could do that, but he was also crazy live, wasn't he? I mean, look at those original videos that we've got of him jumping all over the stage and being fairly out there. So a man with a lot of contrast in himself.
Yeah, he was. But I didn't see any of that when I met him. I can only take people as I actually find them. So my experience of him, over a number of sort of meetings was always fresh, alive, open, excited. You know, that's all I know. That's the Peter Banks that I know.
Yeah.
Or knew. And that's the guy I would like to do. Yeah, I'd love to be touring with him now. That would be fantastic.
Lovely. Yeah. Okay, well, I can't wait to get stuck into the album itself now that I've got a copy, and we'll be reporting back on the podcast our thoughts about it. Really, really exciting to hear it. So,
well, I hope you enjoy it. I really do, I'm proud of it, and I think Peter would be.
Yeah. So, thank you very much indeed for your time today, David, and hopefully we'll have you back on the podcast soon to talk about some other things.
That would be lovely. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you, David.
This is Miguel Falcão at miguelbass.com. You are listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Established in 2011, this is Two Fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
Just before we go, here's the patron update. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Griselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. And half of the Yes Music Podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenes, Dave Owen, David Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, David Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.B. Peterson, Ian M.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Michael Handahan, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson, and Barry Gorski. Continued thanks to Robert and David as always. So thank you very much indeed to all those patrons. If you'd like to join them helping to support the YMP financially, then please head over to Patreon, patreon.com/yesmusicpodcast, or just find the link on the show notes for this episode. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. As I said at the beginning, hopefully we'll be back to Dollar and Trevor Horn next week. In the meantime, please do keep getting in touch with the podcast on the website via email, show@yesmusicpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.